Proverbs 26, verse 1, as snow in summer and as rain in harvest, so honor is not seemly for a fool. Snow in summer, it just ain't right. Just something's not right about that. In fact, it's actually, if you're a farmer, snow in summer is dangerous for the crops. If you have, and rain at harvest time, we might think, oh, that's good, that's good. No, it's not. Not if you're about to harvest your fields of wheat or barley or whatever. The rain is going to come and ruin your crop. So these kind of things are not only not right, it's kind of dangerous. And so he says, just like those things, honor is not seemly for a fool. Now, we're going to be reading lots about fools. And so if you're not sure who the fool is, just hold on. There's plenty in Proverbs that tell us what a fool is. Verse 2. As the bird by wandering, as the swallow by flying. You know, these little birds that fly around and stuff. He says, so the curse causeless shall not come. Another translation, like a fluttering sparrow or a darting swallow. An unfair curse will not land on the intended victim. This is really a cool verse. Very cool verse. I find it very, very practical. I use it a lot when I talk with people because there's a mentality among some people about this. I'm fearful that somebody's put a curse on our family, or there's a, you know, I knew somebody who was a witch, and I'm afraid they put a curse on us, or something like that. Pay attention to this verse, gang. Pay attention to this verse. As the bird by wandering, as the swallow by flying, so the curse causeless shall not come. He is saying that if there's no reason for a curse, it doesn't make any difference if the wicked witch of the West is proclaiming curses on you. You don't have to be afraid. A great example that we see of this in the Scripture is the story of Balaam and Balak. And the children of Israel. It's in Numbers chapter 22 through 24 is the curse thing. And, you know, Balaam's the guy that had the donkey that talked to him, you know. And the thing with Balaam is that he was being hired by this fellow, Balak, to curse Israel. Because he didn't think he'd be able to stand up against the Israelites on his own. So he thought, well, we can call in, you know, rent a prophet or something and bring in some help. But so he dialed 1-800-PROPHETS. You know, or something like that, you know, and he called up this fellow Balaam. And Balaam is a strange guy. You kind of wonder what to make of this guy because he seems to hear from God. There seems to be some kind of a connection with God. Some of the things that Balaam says as he is prophesying are quite amazing. And they're prophecies that are a treasure to the nation of Israel. And he would go through these, he had these rituals and stuff. This guy was not an Israelite. This was a prophet from outside. And he'd go through these rituals. He would go, and do his little dances, you know. He'd make these sacrifices. He would cut up animals. He would look in the livers. He would do all kinds of weird things. And then he would have these prophecies. And he'd go, it'd be like he'd go, rah, rah, sis, boom, bah, I'm going to throw a curse on. And then before he could get anything out, he'd start blessing Israel. And this king that hired him, Balak, was just upset, totally ticked off. It's like, guy, I've paid you this big money, and here you are ready to throw this curse, and out comes these blessings. What's the deal? Well, God would not allow him to curse because God loved Israel. God cared about Israel. Deuteronomy 23:5 says, nevertheless, the Lord thy God would not hearken unto Balaam, but the Lord thy God turned the curse into a blessing unto thee, because the Lord thy God loved thee. We don't need to be afraid of causeless curses. Now, if you've done something to deserve it, well, then you'd better go run and hide for cover, you know. Gang, this is what Jesus came for, to break the curse. Jesus died to pay for your sin. So you don't have to face the curse. He has set you free. I think we get afraid of too many things that we should not be afraid of. You run to Jesus. You cling to Jesus. Don't need to be afraid of curses. Proverbs 26, verse 3. A whip for the horse, a bridle for the ass, for the donkey, and a rod for the fool's back. See, that's how you control these, the horse and the donkey, with the whip and the bridle and all. The fool, he says, gets the rod, gets discipline, gets punishment. Now, we live in a society that has done away with corporal punishment. People don't get beatings. Now, remember a couple years ago, there was that fellow back in, was it Singapore? They got the caning, you know, remember that? That was a big deal in the news. You know, some teenage guy was, you know, smoking dope or something like that. And the people in Singapore, well, they believed in corporal punishment, and the kid got beaten by the police or something, by canes or something. We don't do that. We don't do that in America. We're too civilized for this. I wonder, though, if Solomon doesn't know something. But we have other ways of administering punishment, don't we? We put people in jail and things like that. That's what we do in America. The other day, Deb and I were watching a TV show. It was one of those cops and lawyers shows, you know, and we're watching this thing, and Deb says to me, because they get to the lawyer part, you know, and the guy is a bad guy. They've caught the bad guy. They know it's the bad guy. The defense lawyer knows it's a bad guy. But the defense lawyer is trying the hardest to get this guy set free. And Deb turns to me and she says, how could a lawyer represent somebody that they know is guilty? How could they represent that person and do that? You know, and of course that's where we bring in lawyer jokes, you know, and stuff like that. That's why people make jokes about lawyers. But and there may be some that are just out to do it just for the sake of money and all. I believe that when somebody close to us has broken the law, we don't want them to get the maximum punishment. We usually don't. I mean, people I know who've had people who are being prosecuted for things, I mean, they do their best to get them off or get their sentence reduced, right? Don't you? Do you know anybody who is? You're probably all a bunch of goody-goody two-shoes. You know, you probably don't know anybody who's ever been arrested or anything. I've been dealing with some families that I watched walking them through this, and their kids are guilty, you know, of stuff, you know. But boy, we want to get them off and all. A while ago, I was talking with a fellow who works in law enforcement. He's a parole officer for sex offenders. Talk about a lovely job. That would be a wonderful job. And he was telling me that they have developed a system that they've worked on now over the years of what they do with sex offenders who are on parole. They have a three-prong way of dealing with it. They have a polygraph. They administer a polygraph test, a lie detector test, regularly. The person is involved in therapy. They go and talk with a counselor who knows about these kinds of things and what to do with this kind of stuff. And the third part is punishment. And he said that he has learned that to get people staying on track, and for some people to actually turn them around and change their lives, they need to know the price for what they've done. They need to know the consequence of their actions. And so sometimes this particular fellow, and it was, I was just like so blessed hearing this guy talk about this, because I think, at least he fooled me, I think the guy actually wants to see people change. I think he wants to see them to turn around. And see, I wonder if sometimes we miss that. That we want to get away from the punishment. We want to get away from the consequences. But you know what, gang? Sometimes it's those consequences, flat, straight in our face, that get us turned around, wake us up, and realize, you know, man, I got to change. Something's got to change. Are you following me? And I think that's what Solomon's saying. I think he would agree. I think that's what this is saying. He says, a whip for the horse, a bridle for the ass, and a rod for the fool's back. There's a place, we want to get away from it, we want to escape the punishment, but there's a place for waking us up that God will allow us to go through some things that are kind of painful and hurtful, because He'll do what it takes to get our attention. Verses 4 and 5 actually going to go together. Very interesting. Very confusing, verses 4 and 5. Now pay attention. Pay attention very carefully. Watch this. Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou also be like him. Okay. Yeah. You know, you don't have to talk back to a fool. Yeah. Okay. He's a fool. I'm just going to tune you out, walk away. Verse 5. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. Wait a second. I thought he just said, don't answer a fool. I don't know about you, but I'll hear one or the other quoted. We don't often get both of them at the same time. And I was reading that, I was thinking, what? There's
a contradiction right here in the Bible. We ought to give that to those people that say there's contradictions. Here's one. There's a contradiction right there. Don't answer a fool according to his folly. The next verse, boy, this is goofy. Now he says, answer a fool according to his folly. What's he talking about?
here's a couple of ideas, and they're very kind of related. Here's one idea. Don't answer a fool in the same way he foolishly handles his ideas, or you're going to be like him. But answer a fool so that he will learn to abandon his foolish ideas. So International Children's Bible translates it this way. Don't give a foolish person a foolish answer. If you do, you will be just like him. But answer a foolish person as he should be answered. If you don't, he will think he is really wise. I think that's a good way of separating it out. Here's another take on it. Perhaps there's a time not to answer a fool. Because you just need to shut up, because you're going to end up being like the guy. Sometimes you just shouldn't answer. Sometimes you shouldn't get into it. But perhaps there is a time where you would want to answer a fool to help him learn to abandon his foolish ideas. So sometimes you don't, but sometimes you do. And maybe they're not all that different of ideas. The Jewish Talmud, it's a Jewish commentary, suggests that verse 4 applies to foolish comments that can be ignored, while verse 5 applies to erroneous ideas that need to be refuted. So there's a time to just, you know, let's not talk about men on Mars, okay? You know, just. But then, you know, that we are all, there's no creator, we're all, you know, it's evolution. You know, I'm sorry, I can't let that one go. You know, maybe there's a time to just be quiet, maybe, and there's another time to say something. This is interesting. In 1989, before a convention of Arab lawyers, those that were assembled were told, quote, an Arab country does not have the right to occupy another Arab country. And if, God forbid, Iraq should deviate from the right path, other Arab nations must send their armies to put things right. If Iraq should become intoxicated by its power and should move to overwhelm another Arab state, Arabs would be right to deploy their armies to stop it. You know who that was speaking to the Arab attorneys in 1989? Guess. Saddam Hussein. Saying that they don't have a right to invade another Arab nation. You know, 2 years before he invaded Iraq. So I was just thinking, do you think the fool was answered correctly? I think so. I don't know. I'm just answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. I think he's got a good answer now. Okay, verse 6. Okay. He that sendeth a message by the hand of a fool cutteth off the feet and drinketh damage, or gulps down damage or gulps down violence. He that sends a message by the hand of a fool might as well cut your own feet off. Like this. A businessman was checking out of his hotel when he realized his briefcase was missing. "Boy," he said to the bellhop, "run up to room 1484 and see if I left my briefcase there. And hurry, I'm late for leaving for the airport." The man waited anxiously. Finally, the bellhop came running up and panted, "Yes, it's still there." You don't want to send a fool. Okay, verse 7. Verse 7, the legs of the lame... the legs of the lame are not equal, so is a parable in the mouth of fools. And the word, the Hebrew word for parable is the same word that's translated Proverbs throughout the book of Proverbs, like in chapter 25, verse 1, it talks about the Proverbs of Solomon. Chapter 1, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, it's the same idea. So a parable or a proverb, a wise saying, the legs of the lame are not equal, so is a parable or a proverb in the mouth of fools. Another translation, a wise saying spoken by a fool does no good. It is like the legs of a crippled person. In other words, just having the words isn't enough. We talked a little bit about this on Sunday. We talked about legalism. We talked about people who say, "Well, I've got the Bible, and so I'm just going strictly by the Bible," and yet they still get into this legalistic thing and miss the heart of God. That's the Pharisees' problem that they had. That's why they had a problem when Jesus seemed to break their idea of the Sabbath. He didn't break. He broke their idea of the Sabbath. He didn't break God's idea of the Sabbath. And so some people some people have this idea, "Well, I've got the Bible," and then you will see people twist it. The legs of the lame are not equal. So it's a parable in the mouth of fools. I get bothered by, and I was just reminded of a few weeks back by a series of articles in the Register about the folks who teach this prosperity stuff. That if you give them money. Give these folks money, then you will get back 100 times more, and they will, some of these guys get most of their money from, get a lot of their money from folks like on Social Security and stuff, and these guys are, it just makes you sick. It makes you sick. And you know what, gang? There is a truth to it. There is a truth that if you give and God is leading you, there is a truth that God will take care of you. He will. Paul says that in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. That if you are giving and God is leading you, well, you don't have to worry. God's going to meet your needs. God's going to take care of you. But then to ignore all the other scriptures that warn us about living a life to get more money. Proverbs 23:4 said, we read this a few weeks back, don't wear yourself out trying to get rich. Be wise enough to control yourself. Wealth can vanish in the wink of an eye. It seems to grow wings and fly away like an eagle in the sky. Has anybody experienced that? It comes and it goes. And man, if that's your whole life, and people get sucked up with this prosperity thing because they want money. It appeals to the flesh. We want money. But it's like this thing. It's the parable in the mouth of a fool. It doesn't stand on 2 feet. We need wisdom when we're reading the scriptures. We need wisdom. We need to make sure we're getting it right. Just having the word, if we twist it, it's not good. We want to make sure that we get it right. Verse 8. As he that bindeth a stone in a sling, so is he that giveth honor to a fool. If you have, we usually think of slingshots, the pull back and rubber band and stuff like that. And that's okay. That'll work. But let's say you tied the rock to the rubber band. That's what he's saying. If you tied the rock to the rubber band and you pull it back and you let go, it's just going to go boing, boing, and probably hit you back in the face or something. Because that's stupid. Why are you tying it to the slingshot? You want it to be able to release. Are you with me? Okay. So it says, just like that, that's the one who gives honor to a fool. You don't want to be honoring fools, it's a waste of time. Verse 9. It might be even a little dangerous. Verse 9. As a thorn goeth up into the hand of a drunkard, so is a parable in the mouth of fools. Could be a couple ideas. It could be talking about the thorn is a weapon in the hand of the drunk. Some of the translations carry that idea. One translation says, to ask a moron to quote a proverb is like putting a scalpel in the hands of a drunk. And even what we're talking about, you know, with people twisting the word, it's that kind of a thing. It can be dangerous. Another idea, when it says a thorn goeth up into the hand of the drunkard, I was kind of looking at the words that were used in the Hebrew and stuff, and I think it may be more talking about the idea of a thorn getting pierced into a guy's hand. Drunkards won't feel it. It'll go into his hand and he'll go, what's that? You know. A fool could have his heart pierced with wisdom and never know it. Never really hits home. Never really hits home. You can hear it and it goes right over your head. So it could be talking about that. Verse 10. The great God that formed all things both rewardeth the fool and rewardeth transgressors. Now, how many of you, look at your verse 10 again. Let me read it again. The great God that formed all things both rewardeth the fool and rewardeth transgressors. How many of your translations, it doesn't even look close to that? Yeah, well, you've got the newer translations. I guess the Hebrew is real difficult. I was kind of looking stuff up and I can understand why they have a hard time translating. So you've got some of them that have this idea. Others carry the idea, New American Standard says, like an archer who wounds everyone, so is he who hires a fool or who hires those who pass by. And that's what the other half of the translations go. And the idea is that be careful who you hire, make a bad job hiring the wrong person, and people get hurt. Verse 11. Oh, I love verse 11. Verse 11 is great, especially at dinner time. Oh, man. As a dog returneth to his vomit, so a fool returneth to his folly. Have you seen a dog barf and lick it back up again? Right? Just totally. Is that the grossest thing or what? Man. It's gross. The dog seems to like it. Right? The dog seems to like it. Everybody else is running for the bathroom. Right? 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 Well, that's a good point. The dog seems to like it. Everyone else is grossed out. As a dog returneth to his vomit, so a fool returneth to his folly. I think it's about some of those sins that we have a hard time stopping. I think that could be one way of looking at it. Or maybe not a sin, but a habit. Something that I just can't, I'm just having a hard time kicking this, you know. And the dog likes it, and everyone else is grossed out. True story, 1998. In Tampa, Florida, Antonio Valdez Jr. was charged with driving without wearing his glasses. A few weeks later, on his way to court to face the charges, Antonio crashed his car because he wasn't wearing his glasses. Yeah. And talking about dogs with bad habits, that's my lead-in. Just a little lead-in here, okay? A mechanic who worked out of his home had a dog named Mace. Mace had a bad habit of eating all the grass in the mechanic's lawn. Don't worry, I'm not going there. So the mechanic had to keep Mace inside. The grass eventually became overgrown. One day, the mechanic was working on his car in his backyard and dropped his wrench, losing it in the tall grass. He couldn't find it for the life of him, so he decided to call it a day. That night, Mace escaped from the house and ate all the grass in the backyard. The next morning, the mechanic went outside and saw his wrench gleaming in the sunlight. realizing what had happened, he looked up to the heavens and broke out in song. A grazing mace, how sweet the hound that saved a wrench for me. I like it. Well, I'm sorry. I'm back into bad jokes. I found that one today, and I thought, that is great. 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 15 through 22. Peter quotes this thing about the dog and the vomit. And it's a warning he gives about false teachers and the effect that false teachers will have on people, and that they will lead people astray and lead them back into their sins. And so there's a good warning there that Peter gives us about dogs and what they do. Verse 12. Seest thou a man wise in his own conceit? There is more hope of a fool than of him. Another translation. See that man who thinks he's so smart? You can expect far more from a fool than from him. The person who thinks they have all the answers. The person who thinks they have all the answers. The person who doesn't need anybody else's advice. The person that won't listen to advice. Even if you think it's because she's stupid or she doesn't understand. The person that won't listen to advice. Solomon says, you know, we've had some pretty, I hope there's not like a fool's union out there that's going to try to sue us for all the negative things we've been saying about the fools, you know. But Solomon says there is more hope for the fool than for the one who thinks he's too smart for advice. What do you do when you get advice? And not just from people you listen to for advice. But what about your husband, your wife? Those are the ones we tune out right away. Because they are. They don't know. You know, I'm tired of listening. I'm tired of you giving me advice, right? Don't we think that? Hey gang, I've learned. No, it's past tense. It's way behind me now. Learn some painful things the hard way. You know, she isn't wrong near as much of the time as I think she is. She still gets mad at me because she'll tell me something and I'll go, no, I don't hear this. And then 2 weeks later, I go around and I do it. I'm trying to cut that down, maybe like a week or so, you know. And don't tell her that I said this, okay? She's going to start getting a big head or something, you know. But gang, when we don't pay attention to advice, especially when you find yourself just tuning it out without really thinking about it. You tune it out because of who it's coming from. Remember, as a teenager, that's what we used to do with our parents, right? Always to tune out their advice. They just, you know, it's funny. When you're a little kid, your parents know everything. When you get to be a teenager, they're stupid. They don't know nothing. Then you get to be about 30 and you start going back home and asking for advice again. Be careful about that. Verse 13. We begin a section on sluggards, lazy people. Verse 13. The slothful man saith, there is a lion in the way. A lion is in the streets. Now, we've seen other verses like this. The slothful man say, there is a lion in the way. A lion is in the streets. In other words, he won't go outside because you'd never know. There could be a lion outside on the porch. You know, you never know. And so why? I mean, maybe the odds are one in a million, but you never know. You could be the million guy. And so it's safer, it's much safer watching Gilligan's Island. Right? You know, and so the sluggard, the lazy fellow, has excuses. It's all about excuses. It's all about excuses. What kind of excuses do you use? What are your excuses? When you turn something down, when you don't do something, what are your excuses? I know what some of mine are. And I have a friend who calls me on this, and I hate it. I don't like being around him when he does this. I'm too busy, or I'm too tired. You know, how are you doing? Well, I'm so busy. Yeah, I just can't. Oh boy, am I tired. I just can't believe all the stuff I'm doing, you know. I went to this, I'm a part of this, I'm doing this class thing to better myself. And it really is really good because I need a few swift kicks in the rear. And I go a couple times a year for an all-day class thing. And Monday was my day. And so it's my day off. I hate it when the class falls on my day off. It's just like not fair. And so I made sure I was 15 minutes late, you know, and I come in, you know, and I'm sitting there, and the fellow walks up to me and says, "Well, how's it going, Rich?" And, "Oh, man, I'm just so under it, so tired." And he goes, "You know, you don't have anybody to blame but yourself." It's like, "Oh, shut up. I don't want to hear that." He gives me the little swift kick and stuff. And you know what? This is what the whole class is all about. This is what the whole class is all about. I should know better than to use that excuse in that class. Because you know what, gang? That's really at the heart of all of our excuses. I have no one to blame but moi. When I say I'm too busy, what I'm really saying is, when I say that I'm too busy, that I've got too many things, that's why I can't say yes to you. You know, it'd be better just to say, "Well, you know, I've thought about it, and I don't think your thing is the thing I should be doing." That's making good decisions. But if you're too busy, what the problem is, usually with me, I have lots of good things I can do. Lots. I have lots of good things. My desk is a real total mess, you know, lately. I like to have a clean desk just so I pretend that I'm together, you know. And right now my desk is a mess, and I've even let my mess creep into Greg's office, and I just like it's, you know, because see, I don't always make the right decisions between what is good and what is best. Now, I remember, you probably remember these messages way back at the beginning of the church when I first got into the mode of preaching. We started the church and I was preaching three times a week, you know, and I'd come in with 15 pages of notes and I would go on for an hour and a half, and I'd always go a half an hour over, you know, and everybody's kind of going, "Oh, you know, they're yawning, they're going to sleep on me and stuff." And I know you're going to sleep on me now. I know it still happens. But at least I'm learning the end on time. But one of the things that I've learned just in preparing messages is I get all the stuff together. What I used to think was, well, I have to give it all back. I eat 25 pages of book notes. I have to barf it back up on you, you know, to show you that I've been working, you know. But you know what? The truth is, you don't need that. You don't. I can pick and choose. And I used to get so mad at myself. I'd get like halfway through my message, and I'm already half an hour overtime. And I get halfway through my message, and I'm thinking, but I got a really good point coming in about 45 minutes. And I get so mad at myself because I go back and look at all this stupid stuff that I wasted everybody's time telling them about. And I'm learning. I won't say that I've arrived. I am learning that when it comes to my messages, I have to pick and choose. I will spend before the Sunday morning's message, you know, a good chunk of time asking myself, what's the most important? What's the best? Because, gang, the good will always crowd out the best. And if you hear yourself making excuses like, I don't have time, or I'm too tired, you know what? There's no one to blame but you. Because you feel like you've reached a limit and you're starting to turn people down. Well, step back a second, gang. Look at the whole picture. Maybe there's a few people about 3 hours ago you could have said no to so that you could do the thing that's even better than what you did. You understand what I'm saying? It's choices that I make. I have to be careful about my excuses, because if I look at my excuses carefully, I might find out, you know what? I've got no one to blame but me. Got no one to blame but me. Careful about the excuses. You know, when you volunteer to do something because one of us are twisting your arms in this or something, you know, like a church thing. I'm good at this. Craig's got bruises on his arms of all the times I've twisted his arms. And when you get caught into doing something that you're not supposed to do, something that you're just doing it because I cried on your shoulder, you know, whatever. Listen, there are three people that really get goofed up, three people that miss out when I do something that I'm not called to do. Three people. Who is it? First, I miss out because I'm doing the good things, but I'm not doing the best. You hear me? And you know, I'm learning the things that are the best for me. There's things that my personality, my spiritual gifts, there are things that are the best things for me. And I have to be careful that I leave time for the best. So I miss out if I'm doing the wrong thing. Second thing is the people that you're ministering to or you're doing things for, you're hurting them. Because they're there to get ministered to, especially if it's a church thing, it's a spiritual thing. You know, you're there to minister to them. They're there to receive stuff from God, and, you know, and I need God to work, you know. But God's not working. You're working. You're doing it all under your own power. And God's going, wait a minute. I would never sent you. What are you doing this for? So the people that I'm doing this for miss out. And you know who's the third person that misses out? The person supposed to do it. Because if it's something that needs to be done, somebody should be doing it. And God knows who that is. And sometimes they can't do it because I'm in the way. I'm filling the spot. And you know, sometimes, and it's hard. I can't believe I'm preaching this. Because we need more people doing children's ministry. And we need more people cleaning. And we need more people doing this and that. But gang, it's important to do what God wants you to do. Don't make excuses. Do what God wants you to do. Careful with the excuses. There's a lion. There's a lion outside. Oh my. Lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. Let's move on. Verse 14. I'm going to run out of time and I'm not going to finish a chapter and I will have no excuses. Verse 14. As the door turneth. This could be like the title of a soap opera, couldn't it be? Verse 14. As the door turneth upon his hinges. That sounds like a soap opera title. So doth the slothful upon his bed. A door makes a lot of movement. Doesn't go anywhere because it's attached to the door frame. A slothful person, the lazy guy, makes a lot of movement, but doesn't go anywhere because he's attached to his bed. Verse 15. The slothful hideth his hand in his bosom. Bad translation, better the bowl. The Hebrew word is the bowl. He digs his hand into the bowl. It grieveth him to bringeth it up again to his mouth. He's just too tired to lift my hand. I can't feed myself. Another translation says, I like this one. A shiftless sluggard puts his fork in the pie, but is too lazy to lift it to his mouth. Okay, verse 16. The sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can render a reason. In the translation, dreamers fantasize their self-importance they think they are smarter than a whole college faculty. The worst part of the wisdom of the sluggard is wiser in his own conceit. The worst part of the wisdom of the sluggard are his reasons for not doing anything. He has convinced himself why he can't do anything. You know, sometimes I have folks come into me for counseling, and I wonder, what are they in here? What's the point of the counseling? Because you listen to them, you start making suggestions. Oh no, I can't do that. I can't do that either. I can't do this. I can't do that. And you're ended up with, well, then your life's not going to change. Well, I have to change. I need help. What am I going to do? Well, you could do. No, I can't do that. You know, and the sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can render a reason. He's got it all figured out. You have to be careful about that. Verse 17, he that passeth by and meddleth with strife belonging not to him is like one that taketh a dog by the ears. Now, I checked the word taketh the dog by the ears. It means to grab by force, to, you know, get a hold on, to, talks about strength, to, it's like wrestling. This is not tickling a dog behind the ears, scratching Rover behind the ears. This is grabbing it by the ears. And the dog's going to want to what? Bite you. And so, this is what he's saying. You grab a mad dog by the ears. Another translation, you grab a mad dog by the ears when you butt into a quarrel that's none of your business. So there can be times where we meddle, where we get involved in things in quarrels that we don't belong in. Now, this doesn't mean we shouldn't help people. Jesus told the story of the Good Samaritan about who's my neighbor. And you see a person in need. Oh, well, I can't meddle with this. I'm dealing with something that's not mine. No, that's not what it's talking about. But when you get involved in a fight that's not yours, that's what he's saying. There's a story in the Old Testament in 2 Kings 14, a fellow named Amaziah, 25 years old when he became king. He became king because his dad died. Actually, his dad was assassinated. And he becomes king. Not the wisest of kings. Does some pretty stupid things. Gets a big army together and goes out and fights the Edomites, conquers the Edomites, and has a big victory dance and stuff. And decides he's going to take on the next big guy on the block. And I don't know if he was watching too much WWF or whatever it was, you know. And he just wants to take on the next big guy. And so he decides to throw out a challenge to the guy up north, the king of Israel, of the northern kingdom. And he says, come on, come on, come on. Let me fight you. Go ahead, come on, come on. Put up your dukes, you know. And the guy goes, kid, I don't know if he does, you know, puts the hand on the fort and the kid's swinging, you know. He puts his hand. He says, look, what are you doing? You're meddling with trouble. You're getting in over your head. Now, maybe the guy was just, you know, blowing smoke at him, but he wasn't, because they went into battle and Amaziah got whooped. Totally creamed. They took him back to Jerusalem, and they tore down half of the wall of Jerusalem, which is not a good thing. They took all the gold and silver, all the treasures of the temple, of the king's palace. They took prisoners, and they hauled it all off to Samaria, off to the northern kingdom. You want to be careful about meddling in fights that are not yours. Verse 18, as a madman who casteth firebrands, arrows, and death, so is the man that deceiveth his neighbor and said, oh, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. It's just a joke. It's fun to joke around, but sometimes jokes can go too far. And I don't know if you've ever been the recipient of a practical joke gone bad. It's not a good thing. Verses 20 through 22, talking about strife and gossip. Where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. You take the wood out, and the fire goes away, right? So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth. Talebearer, a gossip. Strife goes away when there's no gossip. Verse 21, as coals are to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. So if you're in a group and there's a lot of tension in the group, you take the contentious person out and everything calms down. That's what he says. Verse 22, the words of a talebearer or a gossip are as wounds. And again, that's a bad translation. Better to translate it dainties, candy, petifors, chocolate cake, jamocha almond fudge, dripping with chocolate and whipped cream, and a little some nuts sprinkled on the top, and maybe a red cherry, you know, maybe put a hot piece of apple pie under it or something. The words of a talebearer are as morsels. Anybody want to go for pie afterwards?
Sure.
Yeah. Sorry, buddy. I'm going to go home and watch Angel Game. The words of a talebearer are as these morsels, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. Now, this was back in Proverbs 18:18, the same verse. And the idea is this, you know, gossip. There's something, got to have it about gossip. There is. When you're in a group and somebody says, "Hey, have you heard?" It's just like everybody else shuts up. And I don't know if it's like I know what that is. I don't know if it's like we are psychologically, you know, we need to know that other people are doing worse than us. Could be. It's news, and you know, there's some kind of a power that comes from knowing something that other people don't. You know, there is. I know that's something I catch. I can see it in me. I can see it rising up. You know, I just heard something really. Craig, have you heard about? You know, and I just like, whoa.
Just can't keep a secret.
Yeah, some people can't keep a secret, and so gossip. It's like pie a la mode. And yet, gang, when you hear stuff about other people, somebody's handing you a stick of dynamite. That's what it is. It's not jamocha almond fudge. It's nitroglycerin. It's not apple pie a la mode. Somebody's handing you a gun. And if I not only listen to it, but then turn around and pass it on, I'm just thinking, well, yeah, but I feel really cool. I'm accepted. I can tell somebody some sweet thing, and they'll be my friend then, because I'm the inside info pipeline, you know. No, you know what? It will cause strife. Somewhere, somehow, I've seen it before, over and over and over again. And yet, I don't think of that. All I can think of is the sweet, dainty morsels. The chocolate fudge dripping down. You want to tell me what? Oh. And you know what? Somehow I got to change that picture in my head. It's so hurtful. Somewhere, somehow. St. Augustine encouraged conversation at meals, but with a strictly enforced rule that the character of an absent person should never be negatively discussed. He had a warning to this effect carved on a plaque attached to the table. In other words, I'm not going to talk negatively about somebody's character who isn't there. Boy, I wish I could get that. Lori, my secretary, has this little thing that she heard Greg Laurie use, and I've heard other people use it too, and she thought it was really cool, so she typed up this little thing and a little plaque on her computer. Some of you have probably seen it. It says, you need to think before you speak. Think. You need to think before you speak. Think stands an little anagram. T-H-I-N-K. Think. Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? And is it kind? That could probably eliminate some of that dainty morsel stuff, huh? You know, really could. Boy, you know, it is devastating when you hear some of the rumors that have to go around about you. I don't know if you've ever been devastated by rumors. I've been down that road. But you know what? One of the sweetest things to me is to find a friend who stopped it. Who had started to come their way and they said, no, you're not going to go through me. I tell you, that's a friend. That's a friend. We need to treat our friends that way. Verse 23, we're going to wind this thing up here. Verse 23, verses 23 to 28, talking about hatred and lying and how they're all wrapped up together. Verse 23, burning lips and a wicked heart are like a potsherd, a piece of clay or a broken piece of pottery covered with silver dross. Another translation, smooth words may hide a wicked heart, just as a pretty glaze covers a common clay pot. So someone may have pretty words, smooth words, but it could cover a wicked heart. Verse 24, he that hateth dissembleth, great King James word, dissembleth, disguises. He that hateth disguises with his lips and layeth up deceit within him. Another translation. Your enemy shakes hands and greets you like an old friend, all the while conniving against you. Some people will disguise their disgust with you by saying nice things to your face. And you know what? I'm sorry to say, sad to report, it even happens in church. It does. I've had it happen to me. And I know I'm not the only one that it's happened to. There will be people who, for some goofy reason, get some burr under their saddle. And they will be all nicey, spicy to you. And then one day, they'll be gone and you'll hear about all that they've done. It just happens. Verse 25. When he speaketh fair, believe him not. For there are seven abominations in his heart. Talking about this fellow that's, you know, that will hide his hatred and just speak nicey spicy to you. What's hard to know is when this is happening to you, because you don't want to become a person who doesn't trust anybody. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that. You know, I don't want to stick a gun to everybody's head the first day I meet them. You know. And you don't want to be going down that road. Verse 26, whose hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness shall be showed before the whole congregation or before the whole group. It's not just the congregation of the church. It's just any group. It will eventually come out. This anger, this hatred will come out. Verse 27, whoso diggeth a pit shall fall therein, and he that rolleth a stone, it will return upon him. And again, I think this is all a whole section. I think this all kind of follows one thing after the other. Another translation, if you set a trap for others, you will get caught in it yourself. If you roll a boulder down on others, it will roll back and crush you. Verse 28, a lying tongue hateth those that are afflicted by it. And a flattering mouth worketh ruin. A lying tongue hateth those that are afflicted by it. Husband and wife are getting ready for bed. The wife is standing in front of a full-length mirror, taking a hard look at herself. You know, she says, I look in the mirror and I see an old woman. My face is all wrinkled. Every part of my body is hanging out a mile. I got fat legs, my arms are all flabby. She turns to her husband and says, tell me something positive to make me feel better about myself. He studies hard for a moment, thinking about it, and then says in a soft, thoughtful voice, well, there's nothing wrong with your eyesight.
services for the husband will be held Saturday morning, 10:30 at Forest Lawn. Sorry, where did that come from? You know, for most of the time, we have a difficult time. When we have a difficult time telling people the truth, sometimes we think we're saving them from trouble. But look what Solomon says. He says, a lying tongue hateth those that are afflicted by it. Now, I don't think we need to be brutally honest with each other, like the husband. And I think the husband needs to get a readjustment in his attitude. Just a little. What do you think? But gang, sometimes we fall into the trap that a little white lie, you know, is okay. You know, I'm not going to tell the truth because I don't want to hurt their feelings. You need to think about that. You need to think about that. Because you know what? We want to be open with each other. We want to be truthful. The Bible says that in Ephesians 4:15, one of the keys of growing up is learning to speak the truth in love. That's how we grow up. It's how the church grows up, speaking the truth in love. It's kind of the opposite of this, isn't it? Lying tongue hateth. We're supposed to speak the truth in love. Let's stand and pray.